You're listening to Type Radio. My name is Richard Niessen. Now we're talking.
You're listening to Type Radio. My name is Donald.
I'm Lisa.
It's June 7th. We're in Amsterdam and our guest is Richard Niessen. Welcome.
Thank you.
We have a standard first question.
Okay.
Are you religious?
No, not really. Well, maybe the place where all my spirituality goes is the graphic design field.
So you could say that graphic design is your religion? Because the writer Ellen Lupton, she said the same thing.
Oh, really?
But without hesitation, she was like, design is my religion.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
some people say that they tell me, yeah, you are really on a mission. So in this way, I want to spread the word of graphic design. Yeah. Yeah.
But do you feel like that?
Yeah, I think so. Maybe art in general is dealing with the same thing. But I think I just had this reading sessions with other colleagues in The Hague where I'm teaching, and it dealt with magic and also spirituality. And then we had this conversation, and I had to say that within a few works that I made, or when you work on something, you look for the truth in a way. So this moment where all the pieces fall together and you think, yeah, this is how the work, how it should be. And then this is a sort of spiritual experience. It's like seeing the light, or suddenly it's there. So none of all the other colleagues had that experience. So maybe it's personal. But I really think that within a good design, when things fall in place, it's like mathematics, or it's like the thing is solved somehow, and it becomes perfect in a way. So I think it has to do with that, because when I work on a commission, then there is all these elements that need to be will have their place within that one work. It's really about what is the relationship between those things, and you really start to puzzle and to try out. And then suddenly it's there, and that's something that's not possible to describe. You just see it, and that's another thing. Yeah. So I wouldn't say religious, but it's a spiritual experience.
And if you revisit the projects after a few years, do you feel that was still the right answer?
With some of them, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I feel this vibrating within. But I also see that in works by others that I really admire. That I think, oh yeah, that's where they. And I think it's also an example of how to live, for instance, because it has to do with freedom, and to have the freedom to come to that point. So you don't have to. It's a real. Coming to a point where nothing else matters but this doing this thing, and to dedicate yourself to it, and to also make sure that all the elements are able to fall in place. So when a commission is not completely set in the right way, then you have, you feel this within yourself that you have so much trouble working on it, or then this flow is not not circulating. So then it doesn't become real in a way. So then you won't have this spiritual.
But can you accept failure? Because if you always have this feeling that you need to get to a point.
No, I can't accept that.
No, it's difficult.
So
what,
really yeah? Difficult.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah,
what do you do if you don't find that?
Well, I had this thing this week that I really I said yes to a free assignment or to a project that was not paid, and then I set myself a really high goal. Like I want to renew myself within this thing, and it's an opportunity to. But I also knew that somehow the parameters were not right, because I had to work with two colors, and the format was not that, like, not comfortable. And then, yeah, I set these high goals, and then I had little time. So then, like, that's what I said. Then the commission or the parameters are not right to. Yeah, to be able to get to this point. But I was really hoping, because it has been a while that I reached that moment. I'm sort of also addicted to that, of course, that every now and then you need to have this this moment that you succeed in it, because it fulfills you then for a while. So yeah, that was a failure. So in the end, I had to take something that I had already made and then adapt it a bit to that do those colors, and it's not a real, like, I'm not proud of it. For the project it's fine. A lot of these unpaid projects are not really getting the best out of people. So but yeah, since I had I really wanted to make something new. I felt really that I failed this time. So it was really like a thundercloud in this house. But not nice for my wife and children.
But do you care about other people's opinions?
Not so much. Yeah, I am very influenceable, or like when that. That's also a difficult thing that I have to. I'm really bad at making the circumstances so that I can work in an optimal. In a way that this flow starts to go. So to have enough time, to have enough money, to have enough resources. So when, for instance, a commissioner. Says that he or she likes red, I'm very quickly tempted to start to work with red. Well, that's always it's always a problem then. Yeah.
Red the color?
No.
I've had problems with red. No.
Yeah. Green it always works, but
reddish.
No, or like it's certain opinions, but. But on the other hand, sometimes, like also last year, I worked on a project and I used a typeface, and then they said, we don't like it so much, can you do something else? And I'm like, no, I'm not doing something else. And then they asked again, and I was like, okay, I will try. And then it worked. Suddenly, like the typeface they had in their identity that they always used, which, like from a distance, I would never use that typeface. I used it and it was like, oh wow, maybe it's much better like this. So it's really difficult to, sometimes it helps you, opinions of others, and sometimes it really not helps you. And it's hard to notice which is helping you or not. So yeah.
The red line throughout your oeuvre. Mm-hmm. Is the typographic masonry.
Yeah.
Is it possible to explain that in a couple of sentences?
Yeah, well...
What is typographic masonry?
Well, it's actually in the beginning I didn't think so much about it. I was visiting, I think it was in 2003, an exhibition on Hendrik Weideveld, who is, yeah, you probably know him. He's an architect designer from the, you could say, Art Deco time, 1900 until 1940 or something. He was the initiator of the Wendingen magazine, which was published during the same time as De Stijl, for instance, so 1920s. And he was an architect and a designer, so he was actually designing was... he was designing as if he was an architect. So he was using the metal type, the movable type, and constructing facades, actually. So a poster to him was a facade. Could there also be in building? So when I was
in that era, in general, like there was no real definition of like a graphic designer, an architect. It was you were just like a visual artist.
Yeah.
And you basically you did chairs, interior design, you did city planning, architecture.
Yeah, I think what back then were real graphic designers were the book typographers, mm-hmm. of course, and they also disliked his work. But on the other hand, he was also disliked by people as Van Doesburg or who were more modern. So he was also an in-between person, which fascinates me always, that the in-between people. But so I was visiting this exhibition. I was really struck by, because I've seen his work like on images in books, but when you see it in real, you really see how he built it. And I felt very much related to that work, because I was doing sort of the same thing, but then on the computer. So in this exhibition there was a text, and they wrote like his work was nicknamed typographic masonry, like typographic brickwork. So back then I thought, oh, I steal that name, and I start working with it. So for a while I've used that as a sort of company name, or to describe my work. And then I had this overview exhibition in Chaumont, and I made when one work of typographic masonry is like a building, then all the works together form a city. So that's how I invented this exhibition, which is called TM City, so Typographic Masonry City. So this idea grew in a way. And later, someone called me from the Freemasonry people in London, actually. and because they thought that I was practicing some sort of
well, that
cult
was like
thing.
Yeah. I recall like first reading about it and thinking, does this have to do something with Freemasonry or something? It was sort of confusing, because you either think it's like craftsmanship, mm-hmm. and then also the Freemasonry, but that's purely the word.
Yeah. So I was surprised. I couldn't believe this call in a way. But I already had collected some books on Freemasonry, because I like the symbolic universe of it. But I never really connected it to my own work. So now I started to connect it and to suddenly see also this connection with craft and like the guilds they come from, and also a bit this secret brotherhood. A conspiracy is like when you meet other designers, it's like no one else in the world knows what graphic design is, except for those who practice it.
Special signs,
which
only you understand.
Yeah, so you understand the language of... So
you're coming out now that you are part of the secret society.
yeah,
for
yeah.
everyone to hear.
Yeah, no, I never connected...
okay.
No. But I also like to, I like a lot of analogies with that secret brotherhood. Also the idea that like they meet, they work on a work. It's also called a work, I think. So, and they imagine it to be, to a person to be a rough stone. And then during his life or her life to be... changed in a perfect cube or perfect stone that would be part of the bigger building that society is, So for me, this connection to graphic design is sort of obvious. I also try to explain it in the Palace of Typographic Masonry book that, this I really see it, when you make a work where you have this spiritual moment that you think that things are in place, I think that really contributes to society as a whole. At least that's also what motivates us as designers. Now I speak in general, but I noticed that with a lot of colleagues, that you want to do the right thing. It's not that you do your hobby and you want to do it to express yourself or something, or to do it because it's your own pleasure. You want to make something good that that brings beauty into the world or something, or I don't know. It's not for your own sake. It's for the sake of others as well. So I also think that it's important to somehow get this message spread, because commissioners sometimes think that when you want, for instance, it not to be read, that it's somehow your own that it doesn't, like, that it's your own opinion or something, or yeah. It's hard to explain but it's also your intuition that is trained and this craftsmanship that is that has to be recognized. Mm-hmm. So that was also one of the reasons too.
Yeah. Your work is, which I also interpret as part of that masonry, that brick building, your work is sort of built on different smaller elements, almost like a pattern. Is that also a way to sort of, as a statement against less is more modernism?
It's not really a statement, but I dislike, what I dislike about like modernism is that that was something that I explained to students that visited me, for instance, in the Bijlmer. And the Bijlmer is a modernist era in Amsterdam, where they had built these huge story buildings based on a grid and separated each form of life, actually. So you live here and you go shopping there, and with your bike you have to go on this lane and with the car on that one. And it's this sort of organizational drift of graphic designers that can also be I wouldn't say dangerous, but can make everything look tidied up. But in real, of course, that's just the surface. So that is also something we noticed when living in the Bijlmer. That you take away the sort of human needs to meet or to take a detour or to also have surprises along the way when you. When you do it the Wim Crowell style, in a way, you rationalize everything, and
it's also an aversion against ornament, which is like unnecessary ornamentation.
It's funny because 2 days ago we did a workshop with children on this island, looking at patterns, and they saw the patterns everywhere. Like in each building, like only the brickwork alone is already. They saw it in the car wheels, and they couldn't stop. So when you look around, of course, these smaller elements of which the world is made of didn't disappear. And I think it also gives. Well, let's say it's not obvious. My work is not revolting against modern. It's just like I couldn't make things that way.
But then, is elements of accident very much part of your work? or is it all well, calculated?
I like the element of play a lot.
Okay.
So a lot of my works, I make a sort of a toolkit. So I create bricks or elements to play with. And I make up certain rules, and then with that, it can have every shape in a way. So it's there is a form of accident, but I control it completely, of course, because I make this one work. So, but I always fantasized about when I would have the technical skills, to really turn it into a game or to make it in somehow more playable for others. Yeah.
No, I find it interesting how you say you calculate or you create certain parameters, but if you compare it to, the Bauma, or you, for example, Wim Kraul or the modernists, it's in a way similar working methods, different, maybe visually different.
Yeah.
Outcomes, but very much, very structured.
And it's very structured. Yeah. So that's.
So it's very close, but yet very far away.
Similar way of working, but so completely different end result.
Yeah. In that sense, I think I'm also this in between person, just like this Hendrik Weideveld, who was modern in one way, but also, still felt the urge to. He built his things, of course, also with the movable type, and it was also mathematically correct, you could say. But there was also an element of ornament in it, and detail, and things that were maybe less rationalized. So I think that element is there in my work. I think it's not completely, to the driest form. There's always a element of color or form or that spices it up.
But I also, what I find interesting is also your choice of words for, not during this interview, but masonry. choice of such as masonry and the palace, like. Palace is a word that is not used so often.
Yeah.
These are, it's like of a different world.
Yeah, I like to yeah. Yeah, it's this, I don't know, it's these are words that that set the imagination at work. So, these are words that you would normally not use. So, I think there's a lot of poetry in the work that I'm doing. So it's maybe also something that's different from modernist approach, because there's some undefinable imaginative elements that I want to work with. Yeah.
And apart from creating your work, you also organize. You organize quite a lot of coming together with collectives, not only from the space that you live.
Yeah.
That is something important for you, the connection with everyone, with the community or in the teaching. And
yeah, somehow, yeah. It's not something that I. It's. I like to involve other people in the and also with the work. So I think that's a nice quality of graphic design, is how it also creates a common language in a way that people can relate to. So that is one element, and another element is that as I said, I'm on this mission to save the world with graphic design. But of course, I can't do that alone. And I'm also very much interested in, just like you do all these interviews. There must be a certain interest in other people's work. And that's also something that I share. So it's a lot of fun to invite other people within this palace of typographic masonry to create a new imaginable space, and to see how they are working. And I've always been curious of how do other people do it. And like all the way, like right after my graduation, I started to organize evenings in which, together with Harmen Limburg, we tried to find out, what motivates people to make certain decisions within the creative process. And this has always fascinated me. Like I like documentaries that follow the artist, and you see. Which steps they make in order to produce something. But it's also something that's sometimes covered a lot with myths, and so try to dive into that and I remember one lecture of a graphic designer right after graduating, presenting all the works after each other, like, and then I made this poster, and then I made this book. And it was really as if they made these things within 5 minutes, and then, like, it gave me the idea of looking at a genius. Like, how is it possible? Because when I work, it's just a lot of frustration and trying out and experimentation, and it takes such a long time. And so I felt really bad about it. And then I decided to, when I have to do a lecture, to talk about like the whole process. And then people came to me and said, oh, I recognize that so much, and I'm so happy you showed it, because so it's also a way to try to also be honest about the profession.
You are from Volendam, Edam?
Yeah.
Yeah, originally. Your whole interest in graphic design and become a graphic designer and what you do, does that come from, does it run in the family? Are there artists or designers?
No. I come from a creative desert, you could say.
Yeah, because well, I mean, Volendam is not really known as a cultural hub or something.
No, I was born
what
there.
What is it known for?
Yeah, Jan Smit.
Okay.
Pop yeah, music. Bad music. Oh. Yeah.
Okay.
The Paling sound.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I was born there, but we moved when I was two, so I don't remember. Okay.
Although and where originally the family is from?
Actually, from the Bible Belt. So from east of Utrecht. I think my father had creative intentions, but he was not able to explore that. So maybe it comes from there. He was a wine importer for a while. And then I was collecting the labels and seeing that they had different typefaces, and so it started there. And then somehow I came also, and somehow there was a Meca Norma book in the house. I don't know how it got there, but that really fascinated me. And I think for me already back then, in elementary school, I was already noticing that I was always a bit out of the group. I was not really popular, but I could draw. So to make the school paper, for instance, was a way to connect to people. So then they would need me to design. So that is also a red thread throughout. When I was really young, that I noticed that publishing and to initiate your own stage in a way, it's also a way to, be able to connect to people. Because I was not able to do that through listening to the right music or wearing the right clothes or something, because these are codes that I don't recognize. So I think from an early stage on, I found a way to create new codes. That's why I'm also interested in weird sign systems or creating these games with rules that are sort of completely made up, because in this way you can sort of start over again and forget about all the things that are settled already. Yeah. So, and I thought, yeah, and to relate this to the sort of the power of graphic design, it's this creative strength to also reset the values that are already there and to redesign them, within the visual language. That's something which is so nice and powerful. Yeah.
And was your family surprised in the direction you were going to, or?
No, not so much.
Or really?
They were not really supportive, but they were also not really saying you can't do that. So that's how I ended up. Like also in secondary school, I was doing this school paper and I was doing posters, and also already back then coming up with non-existing institutes. Like the sort of anarchistic fundamental army or something like that, making posters in school, and yeah, to see how you could, I was really putting up these posters in the school and then see how people react on it. It was really something that
Do you have them? Have you kept
still,
them?
Yeah. I always thought they were super good, but then last year I was looking them up and they were actually pretty bad, but.
You didn't include them in a shaman exhibition.
No. The intention was okay.
Yeah, I was a big, yeah, I also remember, yeah, I was a big fan of Joost Zwarte. So I was sort of copying him, mixing it with, more Art Deco kind of. Yeah, he was also a bit Art Deco artist, of course, but yeah, that was, and I would like to have that same concentration that I had as a 16-year-old in my room, drawing with this rotring pen, you know, these letters. That's such a nice. While others were doing other things, I was doing
but
that.
When you say the concentration, but I assume that's what you have when you're working on the projects that you're working, or you don't have a whole day, or
Yeah, it's more the romantic and also the handwork, you know, when you have your pen and your paper and you're just sitting there for hours. That's such a nice, today the computer is a really good tool, but it also frustrates me a lot. the posts I'm doing now are really made out of real blocks. And I make the composition making a three-dimensional sculpture in a way, and then I redraw. I make a picture and I redraw it quickly in Illustrator. So I'm not all the time behind the computer again. So I try to find ways to design without using that thing so much.
And does your family appreciate the work that you do? Or your, you mentioned your children, for example. What do they?
I have two sons. One is I recognize a lot in how he is drawing, for instance, and also using his drawings to understand the world. This is the same drive in a way, like when he has read something or something, he wants to digest that through the drawing he's doing. So sometimes when I'm making something, he's like, oh, what are you doing? And then the next day I'm doing something else with this material, and it's like, oh yeah, you're now doing this. And he really recognized that that way of working. So I recognize a lot in how he is working, and I also see that he's, seeing how I'm doing, and also also trying to do that himself as well. He's very much also obsessed with letter forms, and when I was in Korea, I asked someone to write his name in Korean, and he's like, he's putting that on his door, and it's like, for him, these are also these magic signs, and it's just this, it's such a rich world. And we sometimes are so much used to it and also sometimes tend to forget it. But through him, I also see how magical it is. Yeah.
And your other son?
He's more into football. Okay. He's more a physical guy.
Yeah.
And he's for him, it's really easy to connect to other people, to other friends. So he's got a lot of friends. Either my older son doesn't have that many friends, because he's such an individual. Like he has thoughts that he can't share with other. So he also needs this tool to make this connection, and to change the world a bit so that he fits in a bit better. I think that's how it works. Yeah.
Because you also work with your partner, correct?
Yeah. Esther is also a graphic designer. And we tried to have a studio together for a while. We thought that was a really great idea, and then we would have all these clients, and it didn't work that way. So it was really difficult to make things together. So now we work in the same space, but we have our own entrance to the studio in a way. So we have our own clients and our own projects. But we discuss the work, of course, and it's
And do you collaborate now with having like separate practices in a way?
Yes.
Do you do like comment or ask for comment?
Yeah. So
like there is a mutual influence, you could say.
Yeah. Yeah. We worked on several projects, of course, for a while. We were this studio, and we also set up a magazine which is called 1-2-1-2-1, in which we also interviewed other designers and artists on their practice. So there again, you have this interest in the working method. And this took us 6 years to make 9 issues, because we were working so long on it to be both satisfied with the result. That sometimes takes longer than working alone on something. So like last week when I was doing this free assignment, she also commented maybe you have too many goals and maybe you should make it more simple or use something that you already have.
Do you listen?
Not always, or let's say not directly.
Do you want to tell her something?
Now is the time, Risha.
This is the time.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll be there forever.
Yeah. No, but it's always helpful. Also to just... because it makes, like when you have a conversation, it forces me to formulate what my doubts are or whatever. So it's always helpful to, it's also a way to step back from your own work. Yeah.
The 1-2-1-2-1 project was on my list, so
yeah,
check. But interviewing other designers, we can relate to that immensely, of course, being type radio. Is that also like what you mentioned before, a way to connect to the world, in this case, the world of other designers? How do you pick the designers that you used in the project?
It started because we were getting commissions, but then, for instance, to make a catalog for an artist. And then there were these rules of how a catalog should look like, and the work of the artist should be untouched, and it's always full color reproduction. And so we wanted to create a platform where we were able to be sort of free to experiment with the reproduction of the work, with the mixing of text and images, and to also try to find an entrance behind the myth of the artist. So to just ask them, like, how did you start? Why do you do it like you do it? Instead of creating a philosophical story around the work. So then we started with limiting to our generation, first of all, and also to the Netherlands. And then we try to find a range of artists and designers that are that create a sort of a spectrum of what the possibilities of this creative field is. So from someone who makes sculptures to photographers to graphic designers to people that make film performances. So in this way we try to look at all the different aspects of that field. And the last variable or aspect was we wanted to choose people that were also aware of their the way their work was reproduced. So people that would be interested in trying to find a way to reproduce their work. And we also wanted to interview them, or we asked them about it. Like, are you aware that when you photograph your work, it's a different, like it's not your work anymore. And then when you print it in full color, that it's different than would you when you would be surrounded by the work or in front of it. Because we thought that this idea of representation got lost a bit. A lot of people are not aware that when they look at an image of an artwork and on the internet, that it's not the real artwork. Like when you really go there, it's a different thing. But you assume that you already saw it, and you don't have to go anymore. And this goes as far right now that I noticed that when we were making an exhibition here with people that they set up a camera and then they are installing the work to see how well it will do on the picture.
Yeah.
But then for the visitor, it's really inconvenient because it might be too close to the wall or, you know, spatially it doesn't work. But for the picture, it works a lot. So
that happens often? Do you see that often?
That's, I think, more than ever. Yeah, it's more and more the case. I also heard this story that Museum Voor Linde is a real selfie. they had this Kurosawa exhibition, mm-hmm. and they placed the works in such a way that when you wanted to photograph yourself with the work, that you didn't see the other work. So it was arranged not on how it will work in the space, but how it will work on the picture. So that's a
very
new tendency. Yeah, it's really interesting. So it's even like we started this series, 7 years ago. But yeah, within these 7 years, it has gone even further than we would expect. But the nice thing about the experiment is that with a lot of these issues, they're not printed in full color. It's just black and white or two types of black or an iris print. And you feel the spirit of the work a lot. But it's interpretation of the work. So in that sense, we thought you could come closer maybe to the experience of the work in a way that you don't have to, not necessarily in full color. Or
and apart from applying or having the work, in what way were the artists that you interviewed involved in the project? Did they have a say in?
Yeah, that's what the name 1-to-1-to-1 comes from, because we wanted also to create a way of working in which we were not the designer and they were the client or something like that. It's more like a collaborative project. So the first one is SME, and the second one is the artist, and the third one is the printer. So the printer was also involved, I think, coming up with technical solutions or wanted to print on this type of paper for once and to see if we also would like that. And so that was how we worked on it. And some artists were more involved than others. That's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
When they were more involved, it was super nice. I remember working with Maurice Scheltens and Lisbeth Abenes. They are photographers. They were super involved.
Didn't they have something in full?
Yeah. 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 estimated
catalog.
It's
more like product design, but in a very sort of artistic way that you can't tell, is this art or is this...
Yeah. Oh, there's Esther.
I wanted to talk about Bas Oud.
Oh, yeah.
Because he was your teacher at the Rietveld. He was a big influence on your life and work, you could say.
Yeah, already as a teacher, because when I started on the Rietveld in 1990, he was in the basic year the design teacher. So I really liked his assignments, and I also really liked his theories. And I was not the only one. He was a really influential designer or a teacher. So when I had to do my internship 4 years later, I asked him, can I work with you? So back then he was already suffering from this diabetes illness. So he actually stopped his career sort of back then already. But he said, yeah, you can sit here and do your own things and you experience a little bit how a studio works. So I enjoyed that a lot. Also as a person, with his own, I think I shared a lot his view on design and also his dedication to it. It was all for him in a way. He shared also a studio with Melle Hammer, who was also a big influence. So we became friends, and after a while I thought it would be nice to, because no one knew his work, so to be able to create a sort of a tribute to him, and to gather a few other students that are very much influenced by him, and to make a book together. So yeah, we did. Yeah. But yeah, and so then we also interviewed, I interviewed him about his typography, and Esther also made a booklet in the book we finally made. Interviewed him on the reproduction of images. So actually these two elements were also the basis for this one-to-one-to-one project, because he has also very particular views on how to reproduce images, because he was trained as a printer. So he knew how inks would react, or for instance, an example that I always give also to students is that he used opaque white ink in offset on paper that has a lot of wood in it. So for instance, he made a calendar with that. So when you would hang it in the light, suddenly the white ink starts to appear because the wood becomes more yellow. And to use these kind of tricks within your work, that's such a nice, that was quite specific. And
It goes deeper into the design. If the inks are sort of considered like really that white on white, which on the computer would be invisible, but in that, you just by the use of materials.
Because he also liked, for instance, to work with a gray and a black, and then overprinting it, and you get these nice deep colors. And so it was really, an inspiring figure. Yeah, also because he could talk practically about profession, and not a lot of teachers on the Rietveld. I don't know if it was the same, especially in the postmodern, it was more like, you do whatever you want to do, and there's nothing actually we can teach you. We are more like coaches, but he really.
Well, that is the atmosphere. The teaching, especially in the 80s, and when I studied there, also the attitude at the Rietveld. So, if you need something technical or specific, you just go find it out. Well, for us, which is just a way of thinking and a way of looking at things, which we are teaching here.
Mm-hmm. Which is also good, but as a student, you also sometimes need. It's also fun to hear someone with a lot of knowledge, and theories about the work. Like that's also something that I think a lot of designers lack. To really have a certain idea of what they are doing. I think he stood out in that sense, so that was very attractive.
And you, what is your position as a teacher?
Struggle with that as well. Like I try to, I try to make the students aware that of the design process. So I show them a lot of my own processes, and I also try to not be the teacher that knows everything or that has a certain authority. And also share with them the doubts I have myself. And then I try to transmit what I know, but to do that in a way that I make sure that it's my particular view. It's not so they can choose to listen to that or not, but it's not.
And do you believe in talent? Like, mm-hmm. Does it exist? You know, like that
yeah,
you're born
I think
with
so.
Something.
Yeah. Because talent. Yes, and of course that also has to develop. But it has to do with the interest, like with the position you have within the world. Mm-hmm. Just like I was mentioning, my son who has this. Yeah, he needs to use his drawing as a tool, so that makes him, of course, he's talented in drawing, but he's also very much interested in it. Like some, when we were doing this workshop, you could definitely see that there are like four kids that are interested in it and want to concentrate on working, and others just don't. They have other interests, mm-hmm. So they have also other talents. Maybe that's connected. And I certainly think that you can develop this talent, of course. But I'm also thinking of, what would be the best way? Like with teaching, I think that's difficult. The teaching takes up a lot of time spending with the students. I would really like to think more about like what could be a nice way of dealing with this teaching situation, yeah. Because I'm only teaching for 1 year now, and I do a lot of workshops, but that's different, I think, because then you're more working within a method, and you have to have this end result in the end of the week. So that's,
You're teaching it at The Hague, in The Hague, right?
Yeah.
Do you feel a difference in way of working and approach to design between the Rietveld where you studied and the academy in The Hague?
Yeah, in The Hague it's much more like that's also a bit their unique selling point in a way, that they want to engage to society in a way, sometimes in a false way, I think, because engagement in itself is maybe not that interesting, but it attracts students that really want to contribute in one way or another. They're not so much interested in their own artistic development. They really want to make things that have a certain impact. And they also struggle with that because they also see that, there might be no place for them when they have graduated. Mm-hmm. So, and they also are a bit skeptical about like all these world problems. How can they ever contribute to that? So, we have a lot of talks about that, which is super nice because these are also doubts that I have. Yeah. Yeah.
And have you taught at the Rietveld as well?
Yeah, also before. Yeah. That's more individual artistic language development. Also, I think even more talented.
You mean now?
I think the Rietveld still attracts the most talented designers.
I think you're biased.
Yeah?
I don't know.
Yeah. No, when I go to the graduation show, you see, I'm really still I don't go to many graduation shows, but I'm always surprised of how this development continues. And
are there still a lot of similarities then from what the Rietveld is now to when you were there?
No, it's different.
No, in sort of out, like, do you feel connected to what students are doing now than 20 years ago in mentality?
Well, I think this artistic freedom and the island that they are on somehow, they all connect with this idea that they are the best as well. It's a bit like Ajax. And that's what we had as well. We also thought, like, we really look down on other academies. It's like we're the best. And that gives you also a sort of energy also when we were graduated, we really felt that that now it was up to us, and we didn't care too much about the, it's very narrow, of course, mm-hmm. but that's also nice because that makes you also specific. When you're too much aware of
It's also this feeling of while studying at the Rietveld is that you are going to take over the world when you graduated. Well, then it would start, and then mm-hmm. all the power and all the good jobs would like land in.
They're waiting for you.
that feeling. And of course, that was a big disappointment.
But it's somehow also that's the spirit still, I think.
Last question.
Yes. How would you like to be remembered?
Oh. Wow. And while Esther is listening.
A good husband to begin with.
A loving husband.
I can
fill
it in for you.
A good father. Go on, say that.
What have others responded to?
Not a question.
I just edited Rick Vermeulen the last week, and he didn't have an answer. He said, I can't answer that, actually. It's too difficult.
Yeah, it's really difficult.
Massimo Vignelli even talked about the typeface he would pick for his tombstone.
Yeah.
I remember that.
That's quite specific.
It was very specific.
Yeah. No, it was... last year we made this Palace of Typographic Masonry book, and I think I was really happy that it came out, because a lot of thoughts that I had on the profession and they were now... I worked with Dirk van Weelde, who was sort of the ghostwriter. So he wrote it down in a really nice way, and took it out of my head, and then Esther designed the book. So then, suddenly this was there, and I was also really happy that that all these thoughts are now an object, and that it that future generations or my own children could actually read this. So that ID made me happy. So there is a certain idea of how I would like to be remembered, I guess.
But could you say that the book is maybe a nice way for you to be remembered? Is that the pinnacle of like who you are and the work you do?
I think there's certainly a core in that, although it's also after 1 year already a lot of new thoughts come up, and maybe there will be it's of course an endless thing, but I'm also really happy it is there, and it's something that, for instance, from my own parents I would like to have had, that such a document is there, and I don't know.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay.
Radio Break. Radio Break.